Hey everyone, Tamara here. Welcome, welcome. So today I want to dive into a very personal topic, and that is, dun dun dun, confidence. Because at the end of the day, what it really takes to be a strong innovator and leader to kind of go with your gut and do the things in the world that you want to do, confidence is really at the root of that. Confidence is what allows us to push forward or helps us push forward. And all too often in my work, what I hear from people isn't a lack of ideas. It's not a lack of skill. It's actually a lack of confidence. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. That's what we're going to dive into. I want to share the four traps that are really sabotaging your confidence. And of course, I then want to talk about how to get over them so that you can push forward. So we're going to talk about paralysis, fear, abdicating, and baggage. Those are the four things we're going to talk about, how those sabotage our confidence and our ability to innovate and push forward, and how to get over them. So here we go. Are you ready to dive into this? Oh, and before I forget, I just want to tell you, people often ask me what tools I use to do my business and to kind of reach out to millions of people across the globe. Right now, I am using StreamYard. So StreamYard allows me to stream to multiple platforms, have the recording, bring on panelists if I want to. So that's what I use. So right now I'm streaming to Facebook as I record this over StreamYard, and then I'm going to take this recording and I'm going to put it onto the podcast. So it's a little bit multifaceted, which is one of the reasons I love about it. So if you haven't checked out StreamYard, I would definitely go check it out. It's so simple to use that even I didn't need a tutorial, and that says a lot. So go check out StreamYard. All right. Let's talk about confidence and the four traps that you might be falling into. And I just want to tell you, so if you know me already, you know I am a person that's about full transparency, pulling back the curtain and sharing all the good and the bad and a lot of the ugly. If you're new, there you go. So I'm going to share some stories about my experience with these four traps as well so that you can kind of understand where they come from, how they present themselves, and hopefully learn a little bit that'll help you get over them as well. And if you've got stuff to share about them, I would love to hear it. So hit me up on social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, wherever you are. I'm probably there too. Clubhouse, join me on Clubhouse. It's my new fave because you actually get to connect with people. So instead of just talking to people, you're actually having conversations, which I absolutely love and miss in this COVID world. But hit me up anywhere. I'd love to hear your stories about it as well. All right, so let's dig in. Paralysis, fear, abdicating, and baggage. All right, let's start with paralysis. So paralysis is when you freeze, when you really want to push forward, when you have the drive for something, when you have that idea, but instead you freeze. You don't speak up. You don't pursue the idea. You stop working on it altogether. Maybe you stopped before you even started. Oftentimes I find that paralysis happens when the gap is too big, like where we are now versus where we want to go, our vision or how the idea might come to life. It's like the gap is massive. So paralysis kicks in. Here's the thing with the paralysis. The more we freeze, the more our negativity takes over and the more it chips away at our confidence because we start to believe that we can't do it, that we're not the right person, that is too big for someone like me, whoever you are. So paralysis really chips away at our confidence and our ability to be an innovator. Let me share a personal story with you, something I grappled with recently, because here's the thing. I want to make sure everybody understands this. I think it's so important. So oftentimes we look at people who we would consider innovators, and I'm going to talk about why that's false anyway when we get to abdicating, but we look at those people, we go, oh, well, that person's super innovative all the time. Like they've got special mojo and they're always on cloud nine innovating. But everybody suffers from these things in different levels and in different ways. And it's more like episodes in a Netflix series than it is about how you have to live your life. So you might have paralysis one day and not the next. You might have fear one day and the ability to push through that fear the next. all that is totally okay. So I just want you to know that, because oftentimes people say to me, oh, Tamara, it must be so great because you're like, you just innovate and you take risks and you're so bold. Yeah, but I suffer from paralysis and fear and abdicating and baggage all the time. That's why I'm bringing it to you. All right, so let me tell you my story about paralysis. So the other day I'm sitting at my desk and I'm frustrated and I'm thinking I need to do something big and bold to really spread our work far and wide. I want to make this huge impact. I know people have this incredible ability to innovate, and I need more people to realize that about themselves, because it is the key to performing at your peak and navigating and tackling all this change and the shit that we deal with, right? It's all this, we have this superpower inside our brain that most of us are not accessing. So I've got this super passionate thing that I've been working on for years and that a lot of people are impacted by, but I want more people, the people who don't know about us, to know. But these incremental things like posting on Facebook or, I don't know, doing another podcast a week are not getting me where I want to go. They're not getting me the results I want. So I'm looking at that. I'm going, all right, tomorrow I need to go big. So then I have this idea and I think to myself, okay, I live in Colorado, and Colorado is a state that really prides itself in being a state about entrepreneurship and innovation. Okay. We're always looking to do things differently, to be ahead of the game, to like shift the narrative. It's kind of part of the Colorado identity. It's part of the reason I love it here. So I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I know, here's what I should do. I should call the NBC station here, Channel 9 News, and I should partner with the anchors there to get out the IQER assessment that tells people how they innovate to all the people of Colorado. We should do some kind of innovation challenge where it culminates into like an idea jam session where we get everybody online and we swap innovative ideas and best practices or something, right? But I should create this massive partnership with NBC. And maybe even with like Jared Polis, who's our governor, right? That's where my head goes. And then I freeze, because now I've got to make it happen. So what do I, like, I'm here with my little ideas. I don't have any contacts in this area. And this is way over there. Like, and I haven't done that yet. So, oh my gosh. So I freeze, right? I put the idea out of my head. I go do some other stuff and I freeze. And there's no excuse. That's just what happened. Paralysis takes over. So I realize what I'm doing. I realize paralysis takes over, because I really do believe that awareness is the first step in getting over any of these. And so I think to myself, okay, Tamara, what's something I can do right now? And I'm going to get into that when I talk about how to overcome it. But I do this one thing that gets the engine revving, that just at least puts me in motion. It's tiny, it's small. I just crafted an email. That's it. Not even with a certain person in mind. Just like, if I were to reach out to people, what would I tell them about this? Doing that got me out of paralysis. But I suffered from it. I think there was, it was a 24-hour period where I did nothing. Here I'm sitting on this really great idea and I didn't speak up. I didn't take action because it felt so much bigger than me. And I didn't know what to do or how to do it. I didn't have a full path laid out. And I think that often keeps us from doing it too, is when we think we don't have like every single point in our direction mapped out that we can't possibly move forward. I don't know about you, but when I pull up maps on my phone, if I'm going somewhere, I will look at all of the directions first before I kind of have the Siri tell me, you know, turn here, turn there, go straight. Because I have to see all the directions mapped out before I'll trust that each one is taking me where I want to go. I never change with the directions because of it. It's just this funny quirk. But that's, I think, why a lot of us get paralysis, is because we don't have every single thing laid out. So that gap feels really big. So paralysis is the first trap that's sabotaging your ability, your confidence, and your drive, and really that internal superpower of innovation. The second one, to no surprise, is fear. There's so much, isn't it, that we fear? Fear of looking stupid, fear of being wrong, fear of being inadequate, fear of being fired. I mean, the list goes on, and you probably have some of your own that I haven't even listed. Fear of success, because that means change. So fear really shuts down our confidence, because it is like, to me, it is like bad wrapping on a package that ruins the contents inside. Have you ever gotten something delivered and the packaging was all wrong, so the whole thing got completely destroyed? Well, that's what fear does. Fear destroys our confidence. it chips away at us until it's no longer there because we put more weight on the fear than we do anything else. And so the fear over it, it engulfs us and it becomes us. We start to believe the fear, what the fear is telling us. You're too stupid. It'll never work. They'll never go for it. You'll look dumb. You'll fail in front of everybody. You'll have to make all these changes and you don't want to do that tomorrow. That's too hard. Fear takes over. Here's the thing about fear. And I'm going to dig into more of this when we get about the kind of mechanics of fear, but I just want to say this. You know, our fear of looking stupid or gosh, if we speak up and say something different, something more innovative, something bolder, that people will shut us down, does come from a little bit of experience. So oftentimes in our past, if you look way back, we've had consequences for drawing outside the lines. And whether that was in school or in work or in life, many of us, most of us have been shut down in some way for being innovative, and there have been consequences to it. In my book, I don't have it actually handy with me, but Innovation is Everybody's Business, I talk about this. In fact, there's a study I found that talks about teachers, and teachers are amazing human beings, but I thought this was really interesting. They ranked the most important skills, abilities of kids, and of course, creativity was right up there as number one or two. And then they ranked kids based on who had those skills. Then they ranked which kids they liked and didn't like. And guess what? The kids that ranked the highest in creativity were the least liked. Well, why? Well, they're more disruptive. They're a pain in the butt. They're coloring outside the lines, right? They've got 35 kids to manage and you're over there doing your own thing. So I and again, this is not an indictment of teachers. I think teachers are great. I think the system actually doesn't allow for that healthy mindset, which by the way was a whole nother podcast I did with my 12-year-old. If you want to go back and find the Healthy Mindset podcast, that it's fascinating from his view about how school shut down healthy mindset, which what he means by that is like growth and innovation. So we've had those consequences, or maybe we were at work and we took a risk and our boss didn't like it because it didn't let them shine. So they shut us down and took us off the project. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you get the point. We've had consequences over our life that have actually led up to more and more fear. So fear is something we've got to figure out how to push through because it's very real. And sometimes it's a very loud voice and sometimes it's a very quiet voice, but we all have it. So the next one is abdicating. Here's what I mean by that. We somehow, so many of us, it's part of the reason why I do the work I do, so many of us have bought into this unfortunate false belief that innovation is for the select few, that you're, you know, born with this magical gift that the rest of us just, you know, didn't get. And oh, how lucky are they? And, you know, they're usually Susie with the funky purple streak in her hair and the cool glasses. And it's not me, it's somebody else. Now, you're in my academy, who I'm kind of streaming this to right now. So you know that you're an innovator. You've taken our IQE assessment. So we're on the same page that innovation is for everybody and is something that we all have the capability of doing, but we make it hard. And so we abdicate it. When I was on the Clubhouse yesterday conversation, and by the way, if you're not on Clubhouse, hit me up and let me know. I have some invites. I love how they've done it. They're brilliant. It's all about scarcity. But it's a really phenomenal platform because you really do get to connect with other people. But so we're having this conversation about abdicating. And one of the people in the Clubhouse spoke up and said, you know, Tamara, I hear what you're saying. For me, I abdicate it because I make innovation so hard, right? Like, oh, innovation is this big, has to be out of the box, disruptive thing. So that's not me. So I can't innovate. So I want to share with you what I shared with her very quickly as we go through these. And that is that it's because we've bought into this definition of innovation, that it is this hard, exhausting, outside the box, blue skies, got to be breakthrough to be innovation. Innovation happens everywhere in the small and the big. So the definition I shared with her that we've curated over years and years of experience is this. And this is a definition I want you to own. This is how I want you to think about innovation. Innovation is thinking differently about what's right in front of you to create an advantage, thinking differently, a new perspective, a new idea, a new approach about what's right in front of you, your resources, your opportunities, your people, your ideas, what your gut's telling you. to create an advantage, competitive advantage. And that advantage could be a smarter way to work. I was just innovating on my calendar and how to figure out how to manage all the balls that I have up in the air, right? I was doing that. And I was trying to be innovative around how do we get media out there. So innovation happens in all the things right in front of you. We make it big. We make it this has to be disruptive, like crazy town thing. But the best innovation is when you rearrange what's right in front of you, when you rearrange the box. So forget outside the box. But she was sharing, which I thought was so powerful as to why she got there. So that's why I shared that definition with her and I'm sharing it with you. That's our definition of innovation. But we make it hard, so we abdicate it. Well, I don't have the energy for that. That's not me. Like I don't think that big, so I'm not an innovator. So we abdicate it. Problem is there's this really lasting side effect when we abdicate innovation, and that is we start to believe that we're not innovators. So when we do need it and want it, it's actually not accessible to us because we've been shutting it down. It's dusty, it's dormant, and that only reinforces it even more. So abdicating it really does chip away at our confidence and our ability. And over time, we really start to believe more and more, making the gap bigger and bigger, that innovation is someone else, not me. And, you know, I've been there too, by the way. I used to think that. I have this whole story about this guy named Steve, who was a creative director at an ad agency I worked in. And I felt lucky to be around him because he had all the innovative ideas. And like, oh, if I'm lucky, maybe he'll like share something that I'll be able to execute on. And one day Steve didn't show up to a meeting and the innovation was bubbling from the people you'd least expect it. And that was my first experience that abdicating is false and untrue, and we just need the confidence and the room and some of the tools and knowledge to bring that out of us. And you know, I think oftentimes in life too with this is we don't feel, when we abdicate innovation and that confidence to do it, we don't feel like we're living up to our full potential because we're not. And that chips away at us too. It's no fun going to bed knowing you were capable of more and didn't do it because the confidence, that wall, right, was up and the confidence couldn't get through. All right, the last one is baggage. How many of us are carrying around all of these past experiences past experiences, and we carry them around and they weigh us down. They become this mental residue in our brain that we cannot get away from. And then sure enough, what happens? We don't innovate, we don't step up because all this other stuff from our past is pushing forward with us. We cannot let the experiences of our past be in the driver's seat moving forward. We cannot let that happen. The past was the past, the situation is different, the variables are different, we can learn from it, but it cannot be in the driver's seat. It's gotta be in the passenger seat with us. And you know, there's this thing in psychology called the emotional stacking. I like to think of it as bricks. And every brick is that experience, and they layer and layer on top of each other until we have this wall that's been created by all this emotional stacking. And that wall really decides our view of the world. The problem is that wall is based in the past, not the present. So it is clouding our view and holding us back when we could be moving forward. So baggage hurts, right? You had a bad experience. The product failed in the marketplace. Your boss told you to be quiet. By the way, when I was younger, I had an experience like that where it's kind of a combination of baggage and abdicating, where I had a boss tell me to be quiet. Innovation wasn't my job. Don't worry about those ideas. That's for another team or VP level. And that baggage, I carried that around for a long time before I realized she was wrong. And that baggage kept me from speaking up quite a few times because in my head, I was thinking, not my job. I don't have enough experience. Like basically I parroted everything she said to me. It was horrible. Shame on her, but shame on me for carrying that baggage around. So that baggage really does cloud how we move forward. And again, to no surprise, it chips away at our ability to innovate, chips away at our confidence because the negative experiences are what's creating our view moving forward. And isn't it interesting how it just occurred to me, how we're so busy carrying our negative stuff forward, but we don't carry our positive stuff forward enough. And I bet you that there's a whole nother wall that's more glass and beautiful. Actually, it's not even a wall. I'd say it's more like a springboard that pushes us forward if we actually thought about all the positive stuff, but we allow the baggage to be just that, negative baggage. All right, so that's the four, is paralysis, being frozen, fear, right? Feeling inadequate, that fear, the hold that keeps us quiet, abdicating, thinking it's for someone else, and baggage, carrying baggage around. All of those chip away. They chip away at our confidence and they chip away our ability to live up to our full potential big time. So let's talk about how to get out of that. So I'm going to go through those four again, and I'm going to give you some tips on how to get out of it, because do you want paralysis, fear, abdicating, and baggage holding you back? And here's what I found, is I found that we all mostly suffer from all of them. I can't speak for you, but I can tell you that I've gone through all these, and it's a roller coaster, and recognizing that's what's happening is the first step, but also having a tool to get out of it really helps. But I don't want you to feel like, oh, well, fear is me, but I'm not abdicating, or, oh my God, what if I'm all four? Am I totally flawed? No, you're totally human is what you are. A lot of us suffer from all four. I do, that's for sure. And I'm in the business of innovation. All right, let's talk about getting over them. So number one is paralysis. And that's where you don't do anything, where you freeze. Here's what I want you to remember. Action equals confidence. And even better, small action equals confidence and momentum. Here's what I find. When I hit paralysis, if I just ask myself, what's one small thing that I can do to get this engine going, to like get momentum, and then I take that action turns into the next and the next and the next. So let me give you an example back to what I was talking about with that media idea. So I was saying I was paralyzed because I'm here and that idea felt so big. So I thought, well, what's the first thing I could do that would be like putting a key in the engine, right? Getting the car started. Like, what is that action? I thought, okay, well, for me, that would be writing an email, crafting this email, because that would clarify my thinking. It would be something I could use when I'm ready. I'm not sending it to someone. I'm not doing the big scary thing yet of reaching out. I'm just writing a draft email. So that was how I turned the engine and got out of paralysis. So what is that one thing that's going to turn the engine, that's going to ignite those innovation fires that you can do, that's just going to move you forward and forward? So not what's the big thing, but what's that? And I want you to think about this in the experimentation mindset of what's one little thing I can do that I can learn from, and then move to the next and learn and move to the next and learn. And you're going to pivot and adjust along the way. The other thing that kind of, I think, creates paralysis is we think we have to have the full plan mapped out. And then if the plan doesn't work, we're screwed. But that's not true. The plan doesn't work because we stick to a plan that was on paper. What is it Mike Tyson said? Everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. So if you want to get over paralysis, I want you to take us that first step. And I want you to think about your plan as a series of experiments for you to go through so that you have the room to adjust and pivot along the way. And you don't get paralyzed when something does or does not go the way that it is expected. Small steps. Action equals confidence. Small action equals confidence and momentum. Okay, the second one is fear. Fear of everything, fear of all of it. So I want to share a story with you about someone in our academy. And if you're on here, hey, good to see you. I'm going to keep the information about him confidential, but I want to share some of the insight that came out of it, because I think it's important for all of us to understand this. So he has a big fear of speaking up, and for a lot of reasons that I won't go into. But like a lot of us, right, we've got a boss who's, I don't know, maybe judging us, or we want to impress somebody else, or we're afraid they'll think we're stupid, or all the fears, right? It's just a big M&M bowl of fear. And so we don't speak up. We don't take that action. So here's what I told him to do that I want to tell you. I want you to start tracking the results of what happens when you push through that fear so that you see how awesome it is when you do it. And you start to build a track record of success in your mind. So let me go to the side for a second and talk about fear, because I've really struggled with this. I used to think that I was riddled with fear, and then whoever it was that took action, got that success, built that company, disagreed with their boss, they didn't have fear and I did. And I thought, how lucky are they that they're fearless? So here's the thing about fear. You can't get rid of fear. It's hardwired into us. So if you're like me, And back in those days, I would really be hard on myself and I would get really angry at myself for having all that fear. Like, why can't I be like that other person who has no fear? I'd be so angry and I'd be so hard on myself. And then I feel like an even bigger failure because like here I am and I can't be fearless. And as I said, so what I realized with the science behind fear is that that's actually untrue. And it's a false narrative that a lot of people push out in the marketplace. It makes all of us feel even worse. Here's the thing about fear. It's hardwired into us. It's human nature. You can't get away from it. It is really important because you need to know if there's something lurking around the corner. It's not meant in modern times the way it's used, right? In our primal mechanics, it's to be like, there's something rustling in the bushes. Perk up. You know, you should be afraid. Now it's in the boardroom and it's a different conversation. But here's what I've learned about fear. So you can't eliminate it. So stop being so hard on yourself. Stop feeling like a bigger failure because you've got fear. But what you can do is push through it and actually, yeah, you can push through it. I think that's exactly what I want to say. So this is why tracking is so important, because when you do that little thing that gets over fear, like speak up in the meeting, and then you write down, oh, because I spoke up, my boss actually acknowledged me. Because I spoke up, I got more ideas because more people engaged in the conversation, and now I can bring that back to my desk. Or because I took the effort, pushed through my fear and took that first action, I actually made a connection that I didn't expect to make. So all those little wins, that's important to track. We want that in our brain, because then our brain starts to go, yeah, Tamara, you can't push through that fear. Look, you just did it. Here's the other side effect that I think is really important. When we start to track the outcomes and all these little wins, we start to get more attached to the outcomes than we do the fear. Our focus, our brain creates more of what we focus on. So when we focus on the outcomes, we're not focusing on the fear, and it becomes easier and easier and easier to push through it. Track it. And then begin to focus on the outcomes, not the fear. All right, the third one is abdicating. Somebody else is the innovator. So I kind of jumped ahead and shared a little bit about, first of all, flipping your definition of innovation. So I'm not gonna talk about that again, but here's the second thing I want you to know. So years ago, I was keynoting at a conference. So I was a speaker and I was talking about innovation, and I was sharing all these great examples of how people at, Disney and Southwest and Apple get to innovate in Google like 20% time and shared bicycles and blah, blah, blah. So, and I know that a lot of you are thinking is blah, 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 because again, it's abdicating. Well, that's Apple. Like, they're an innovative company. I'm over here at my manufacturing company, or I'm over here at my printing shop, or I'm over here at my library, right? That's not me. And so I got off stage and I'm feeling pretty good about myself. And this woman comes up to me and she says, well, Tamara, that's all great, but what am I supposed to do that? How am I supposed to apply it? And it took me back, because in my head, I'm thinking, what do you mean? You're innovative. Like, take this and apply it to your work. Like, you're an innovator. And she said, like, I'm not innovative. My company's not innovative. So what am I supposed to do with this? And she wasn't mad, but she was frustrated. She wanted to be an innovator. And in that moment, I realized that the challenge that we have with innovation isn't about process. It's not about initiative. It's not about the cool brand you work for. We actually have a people problem, because we as humans don't believe that we're innovative. And that's where I got really deep into the neuroscience, behavioral psychology of innovation, to understand how we innovate. And we don't have time in this podcast to go into all the science behind it, but let me just tell you this. Everybody's innovative. We all have the structures for it. And if you're over there thinking I'm not, it's not because you aren't innovative. It's because you've just been dormant. And the mind, while not technically a muscle, acts like one in this way. The more we innovate, the more we exercise that part of our brain, the stronger it gets. We don't exercise it, it feels weak. It is weak. So I recognized that everybody in that moment is when I recognized, hey, we've got a people problem. We need to focus on the human side of innovation, because if we can get all of us to be more innovative, oh, imagine the problems we can solve, the opportunities we could create, the satisfaction we'd feel, by the way, for kind of solving those things and creating new ideas in the marketplace and in our world. So I went on this journey, which led to creating the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment, which is our proprietary algorithm tool built from the ground up based on science that tells you your style of innovation, tells you how you innovate in your unique way. Because here's the thing, you and I don't innovate the same way. how you innovate is unique to you, unique to me. And part of the reason we fail and abdicate is because, you know, we read the magazines and we go, oh, well, that person innovates by doing this every morning. I got to do that. And then it doesn't work. And then we get frustrated. So here's the thing with abdicating. I think to get over that, you need to first recognize that you innovate. So what I want you to do, if you haven't already, is I want you to go to our website, gotolaunchstreet.com, GOTOLAUNCHSTREET. So go to launchstreet.com, all one word. And I want you to take our assessment and I want you to find out how you innovate. And if you've already taken it, I want you to make sure that you've got that report front and center. And I want you to read in there how you add value, how you perform at your peak, so that you can begin to consistently and intentionally strengthen that innovation muscle that we all have. It's universal. That's the beauty of it. That's why I think sometimes when, you know, we read these articles or magazines or whatever about people who've done innovative things, we're like, that person? In fact, I didn't catch your name, but before I started recording this, I was actually listening to a different podcast, the Ed Milette Show, which I love, with a woman who built a $1 billion beauty brand. And she got turned down over and over again because people said, well, you don't fit the profile of like who should be in that industry. So nobody expected her to be the one to create this incredible, innovative brand out there in the marketplace that she sold for, I don't know, $1 billion or something like that to L'Oreal. I haven't read the full story yet, but I was already impressed. But I share that, and I'll put the link to that podcast in the show notes. I share that because I think the reason we have those surprises is because we believe that like this is for some people and not for others, and it's not. So what I want you to do is I want you to understand your everyday innovator style, and then I want you to intentionally and consistently do the exercises that are in the report. I want you to join our Everyday Innovators Online Academy so that we can do the ongoing tools and resources and continue to give you that support and push your confidence forward. I want to break down that brick wall and give you that springboard instead. So that's how we get over abdicating. We recognize and then we align with our own innovation style. All right, the last one is baggage. I kind of say baggage with a smile because I have so much of it. We all do. So here's, I have two things for you to get over baggage that have really worked for me. One is I want you to grab a blank piece of paper, and on one side, I want you to put failures. I want two columns. One side, failures, and the other side, learn and apply now. That's how you're going to title them. Failures, learn and apply now. And on that failure side, I want you to be brutally honest and hard on yourself, and I want you to list out every failure you've had. And I don't care how big or small. I don't care if it's like I walked away from that meeting and didn't say what I thought, all the way up to I had this incredible idea and I never went after it and then somebody else did it. Whatever it is, I want you to put it all down on the failure side. Then what you're going to do is you're going to take each one of those that you wrote. I want you to take an arrow to the other side and I want you to fill in, well, what did I learn and how would I apply it now? Like, what would I do differently now? What did I learn from that? How would I move forward differently? So we're going to take those failures, that baggage, and we're going to chip away at them instead of the other way around. And you are going to list it out so that you can really shift your mindset on those failures and start minimizing that baggage so that it's not so heavy. The baggage can be so heavy. So that's the first thing. Now, here's the second thing I want you to do. And by the way, this works incredibly well with people around you who you're trying to get to buy into your ideas but have a lot of baggage of their own. I like to call them legacy thinkers, but you know who they are. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to ask yourself a question. When you start to feel that fear and that baggage and the brick walls coming up, and you're like, oh no, tomorrow, but in the past, like this happened to me when I did this. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to say yes. I want you to acknowledge it, right? You can't ignore it. If you try to ignore the voice, it gets louder. It's like when you're snowboarding and you're like, don't focus on the tree, don't focus on the tree. And then you focus on the tree because you're trying to avoid it. So you hit the tree. So you can't ignore it, because then you just focus more on it. But I want you to do is say, yes, I hear you, lizard brain or whatever's talking to you. And what's changed since then? Because here's the thing, the world's changed. Whatever that baggage is that you're carrying around that's like, well, you got shut down when you did this the first time. Well, what's changed since then? Well, I've got more experience. The marketplace has changed. The customer is different. I have a new perspective on this. I've got more resources than I had before. Whatever it is. Ask saying yes, but what's changed can make all the difference. All right. I hope this podcast was helpful to you. This was really a podcast about confidence and getting over those things that are chipping away at your confidence, because I don't want to see that for you. I know that you have this incredible confident innovator inside of you, and I want to see it unleashed into the world. So, and like I said, we talk about innovation as like process and initiative, and it's none of that. I think we need to flip the myth out there that that's what innovation is. I think we need to make it a human thing and something that's accessible to all of us. So, and confidence is a big part of that. So thank you for joining. And hey, if you know someone else that should listen to this, because you're like, hey, they have a confidence issue, a crisis of confidence, or yeah, they could really, that's really what's holding them back too, send them a link to this podcast. Like, let's help everybody out. Let's do it together. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining me. Cannot wait for the next one. Tamara out. And how to figure out how to manage all the balls that I have up in the air, right? I was doing that, and I was trying to be innovative around how do we get media out there. So innovation happens in all the things right in front of you. We make it big. We make it this has to be disruptive, like crazy town thing. But the best innovation is when you rearrange what's right in front of you, when you rearrange the box. So forget outside the box. But she was sharing, which I thought was so powerful, as to why she got there. So that's why I shared that definition with her, and I'm sharing it with you. That's our definition of innovation. But we make it hard, so we abdicate it. Well, I don't have the energy for that. That's not me. Like I don't think that big, so I'm not an innovator. So we abdicate it. The problem is there's this really lasting side effect when we abdicate innovation, and that is we start to believe that we're not innovators. So when we do need it and want it, it's actually not accessible to us because we've been shutting it down. It's dusty, it's dormant, and that only reinforces it even more. So abdicating it really does chip away at our confidence and our ability. And over time, we really start to believe more and more, making the gap bigger and bigger, that innovation is someone else, not me. And you know, I've been there too, by the way. I used to think that. I have this whole story about this guy named Steve, who was a creative director at an ad agency I worked in, and I felt lucky to be around him because he had all the innovative ideas, and like, oh, if I'm lucky, maybe he'll like share something that I'll be able to execute on. And one day Steve didn't show up to a meeting, and the innovation was bubbling from the people you'd least expect it. And that was my first experience that abdicating is false and untrue, and we just need the confidence and the room and some of the tools and knowledge to bring that out of us. And you know, I think oftentimes in life too with this, is we don't feel, when we abdicate innovation and that confidence to do it, we don't feel like we're living up to our full potential, because we're not. And that chips away at us too. It's no fun going to bed knowing you were capable of more and didn't do it, because the confidence, that wall, right, was up and the confidence couldn't get through. All right, the last one is baggage. How many of us are carrying around all of these past experiences past experiences, and we carry them around and they weigh us down. They become this mental residue in our brain that we cannot get away from. And then sure enough, what happens? We don't innovate. We don't step up because all this other stuff from our past is pushing forward with us. We cannot let the experiences of our past be in the driver's seat moving forward. We cannot let that happen. the past was the past. The situation is different. The variables are different. We can learn from it, but it cannot be in the driver's seat. It's got to be in the passenger seat with us. And, you know, there's this thing in psychology called the emotional stacking. I like to think of it as bricks, and every brick is that experience, and they layer and layer on top of each other until we have this wall that's been created by all this emotional stacking. And that wall really decides our view of the world. The problem is that wall is based in the past, not the present. So it is clouding our view and holding us back when we could be moving forward. So baggage hurts, right? You had a bad experience. The product failed in the marketplace. Your boss told you to be quiet. By the way, when I was younger, I had an experience like that where it's kind of a combination of baggage and abdicating, where I had a boss tell me to be quiet. Innovation wasn't my job. Don't worry about those ideas. That's for another team or VP level. And that baggage, I carried that around for a long time before I realized she was wrong. And that baggage kept me from speaking up quite a few times because in my head, I was thinking, not my job. I don't have enough experience. Like basically I parroted everything she said to me. It was horrible. Shame on her, but shame on me for carrying that baggage around. So that baggage really does cloud how we move forward. And again, to no surprise, it chips away at our ability to innovate, chips away at our confidence, because the negative experiences are what's creating our view moving forward. And isn't it interesting how it just occurred to me how we're so busy carrying our negative stuff forward, but we don't carry our positive stuff forward enough. And I bet you that there's a whole nother wall that's more glass and beautiful. Actually, it's not even a wall. I'd say it's more like a springboard that pushes us forward if we actually thought about all the positive stuff, but we allow the baggage to be just that, negative baggage. All right, so that's the four, is paralysis, being frozen, fear, right? Feeling inadequate, that fear, the hold that keeps us quiet, abdicating, thinking it's for someone else, and baggage, carrying baggage around. All of those chip away. They chip away at our confidence and they chip away our ability to live up to our full potential big time. So let's talk about how to get out of that. So I'm going to go through those four again, and I'm going to give you some tips on how to get out of it, because do you want paralysis, fear, abdicating, and baggage holding you back? And here's what I found is that we all mostly suffer from all of them. I can't speak for you, but I can tell you that I've gone through all these, and it's a roller coaster, and recognizing that's what's happening is the first step, but also having a tool to get out of it really helps. But I don't want you to feel like, oh, well, fear is me, but I'm not abdicating, or, oh my God, what if I'm all four? Am I totally flawed? No, you're totally human is what you are. A lot of us suffer from all four. I do, that's for sure. And I'm in the business of innovation. All right, let's talk about getting over them. So number one is paralysis. And that's where you don't do anything, where you freeze. Here's what I want you to remember. Action equals confidence. And even better, small action equals confidence and momentum. Here's what I find. When I hit paralysis, if I just ask myself, what's one small thing that I can do to get this engine going, to like get momentum, and then I take that action turns into the next and the next and the next. So let me give you an example back to what I was talking about with that media idea. So I was saying I was paralyzed because I'm here and that idea felt so big. So I thought, well, what's the first thing I could do that would be like putting a key in the engine, right? Getting the car started. Like, what is that action? I thought, okay, well, for me, that would be writing an email, crafting this email, because that would clarify my thinking. It would be something I could use when I'm ready. I'm not sending it to someone. I'm not doing the big scary thing yet of reaching out. I'm just writing a draft email. So that was how I turned the engine and got out of paralysis. So what is that one thing that's going to turn the engine, that's going to ignite those innovation fires that you can do, that's just going to move you forward and forward? So not what's the big thing, but what's that? And I want you to think about this in the experimentation mindset of what's one little thing I can do that I can learn from, and then move to the next and learn and move to the next and learn. And you're going to pivot and adjust along the way. The other thing that kind of, I think, creates paralysis is we think we have to have the full plan mapped out. And then if the plan doesn't work, we're screwed. But that's not true. The plan doesn't work because we stick to a plan that was on paper. What is it Mike Tyson said? Everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. So if you want to get over paralysis, I want you to take us that first step. And I want you to think about your plan as a series of experiments for you to go through so that you have the room to adjust and pivot along the way and you don't get paralyzed when something does or does not go the way that it is expected. Small steps, action equals confidence. Small action equals confidence and momentum. Okay, the second one is fear. Fear of everything, fear of all of it. So I want to share a story with you about someone in our academy. And if you're on here, hey, good to see you. I'm going to keep the information about him confidential, but I want to share some of the insight that came out of it because I think it's important for all of us to understand this. So he has a big fear of speaking up and for a lot of reasons that I won't go into. But like a lot of us, right? We've got a boss who's, I don't know, maybe judging us, or we want to impress somebody else, or we're afraid they'll think we're stupid, or all the fears, right? It's just a big M&M bowl of fear. And so we don't speak up. We don't take that action. So here's what I told him to do that I want to tell you. I want you to start tracking the results of what happens when you push through that fear so that you see how awesome it is when you do it. And you start to build a track record of success in your mind. So let me go to the side for a second and talk about fear, because I've really struggled with this. I used to think that I was riddled with fear, and then whoever it was that took action, got that success, built that company, disagreed with their boss, they didn't have fear and I did. And I thought, how lucky are they that they're fearless? So here's the thing about fear. You can't get rid of fear. It's hardwired into us. So if you're like me, and back in those days, I would really be hard on myself and I would get really angry at myself for having all that fear. Like, why can't I be like that other person who has no fear? I'd be so angry and I'd be so hard on myself. And then I'd feel like an even bigger failure because like here I am and I can't be fearless. And as I said, so what I realized with the science behind fear is that that's actually untrue. And it's a false narrative that a lot of people push out in the marketplace. It makes all of us feel even worse. Here's the thing about fear. It's hardwired into us. It's human nature. You can't get away from it. It is really important because you need to know if there's something lurking around the corner. It's not meant in modern times the way it's used, right? In our primal mechanics, it's to be like, there's something rustling in the bushes. Perk up. You know, you should be afraid. Now it's in the boardroom and it's a different conversation. But here's what I've learned about fear. So you can't eliminate it. So stop being so hard on yourself. Stop feeling like a bigger failure because you've got fear. But what you can do is push through it and actually, yeah, you can push through it. I think that's exactly what I want to say. So this is why tracking is so important, because when you do that little thing that gets over fear, like speak up in the meeting, and then you write down, oh, because I spoke up, my boss actually acknowledged me. Because I spoke up, I got more ideas because more people engaged in the conversation, and now I can bring that back to my desk. Or because I took that effort, pushed through my fear and took that first action, I actually made a connection that I didn't expect to make. So all those little wins, that's important to track. We want that in our brain, because then our brain starts to go, yeah, Tamara, you can't push through that fear. Look, you just did it. Here's the other side effect that I think is really important. When we start to track the outcomes and all these little wins, we start to get more attached to the outcomes than we do the fear. Our focus, our brain creates more of what we focus on. So when we focus on the outcomes, we're not focusing on the fear, and it becomes easier and easier and easier to push through it. Track it, and then begin to focus on the outcomes, not the fear. All right, the third one is abdicating. Somebody else is the innovator. So I kind of jumped ahead and shared a little bit about, first of all, flipping your definition of innovation. So I'm not going to talk about that again. But here's the second thing I want you to know. So years ago, I was keynoting at a conference. So I was a speaker, and I was talking about innovation. And I was sharing all these great examples of how people at Disney and Southwest and Apple get to innovate in Google like 20% time and shared bicycles and blah, blah, blah. So, and I know that's a lot of you are thinking is blah, 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 because again, it's abdicating. Well, that's Apple. Like, they're an innovative company. I'm over here at my manufacturing company, or I'm over here at my printing shop, or I'm over here at my library, right? That's not me. And so I got off stage and I'm feeling pretty good about myself. And this woman comes up to me and she says, well, Tamara, that's all great, but what am I supposed to do with that? How am I supposed to apply it? And it took me back because in my head, I'm thinking, what do you mean? You're innovative. Like, take this and apply it to your work. Like, you're an innovator. And she said, like, I'm not innovative. My company's not innovative. So what am I supposed to do with this? And she wasn't mad, but she was frustrated. She wanted to be an innovator. And in that moment, I realized that the challenge that we have with innovation isn't about process. It's not about initiative. It's not about the cool brand you work for. We actually have a people problem because we as humans don't believe that we're innovative. And that's where I got really deep into the neuroscience, behavioral psychology of innovation to understand how we innovate. And we don't have time in this podcast to go into all the science behind it, but let me just tell you this. Everybody's innovative. We all have the structures for it. And if you're over there thinking I'm not, it's not because you aren't innovative. It's because you've just been dormant. And the mind, while not technically a muscle, acts like one in this way. The more we innovate, the more we exercise that part of our brain, the stronger it gets. We don't exercise it, it feels weak. It is weak. So I recognized that everybody in that moment is when I recognized, hey, we've got a people problem. We need to focus on the human side of innovation because if we can get all of us to be more innovative, imagine the problems we can solve, the opportunities we could create, the satisfaction we'd feel, by the way, for kind of solving those things and creating new ideas in the marketplace and in our world. So I went on this journey, which led to creating the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment, which is our proprietary algorithm tool built from the ground up based on science that tells you your style of innovation, tells you how you innovate in your unique way. Because here's the thing, you and I don't innovate the same way. How you innovate is unique to you, it's unique to me. And part of the reason we fail and abdicate is because, you know, we read the magazines and we go, oh, well, that person innovates by doing this every morning, I gotta do that. And then it doesn't work and then we get frustrated. So here's the thing with abdicating. I think to get over that, you need to first recognize that you innovate. So what I want you to do, if you haven't already, is I want you to go to our website, gotolaunchstreet.com, gotolaunchstreet, so gotolaunchstreet.com, all one word, and I want you to take our assessment, and I want you to find out how you innovate. And if you've already taken it, I want you to make sure that you've got that report front and center, and I want you to read in there how you add value, how you perform at your peak, so that you can begin to consistently and intentionally strengthen that innovation muscle that we all have. It's universal. That's the beauty of it. That's why I think sometimes when, you know, we read these articles or magazines or whatever about people who've done innovative things, we're like, that person? In fact, I didn't catch your name, but before I started recording this, I was actually listening to a different podcast, the Ed Milet Show, which I love. With a woman who built a billion-dollar beauty brand, and she got turned down over and over again because people said, well, you don't fit the profile of like who should be in that industry. So nobody expected her to be the one to create this incredible, innovative brand out there in the marketplace that she sold for, I don't know, $1 billion or something like that to L'Oreal. I haven't read the full story yet, but I was already impressed. But I share that, and I'll put the link to that podcast in the show notes. I share that because I think the reason we have those surprises is because we believe that like this is for some people and not for others, and it's not. So what I want you to do is I want you to understand your everyday innovator style, and then I want you to intentionally and consistently do the exercises that are in the report. I want you to join our Everyday Innovators Online Academy so that we can do the ongoing tools and resources and continue to give you that support and push your confidence forward. I want to break down that brick wall and give you that springboard instead. So that's how we get over abdicating. We recognize and then we align with our own innovation style. All right, the last one is baggage. I kind of say baggage with a smile because I have so much of it. We all do. So I have two things for you to get over baggage that have really worked for me. One is I want you to grab a blank piece of paper, and on one side, I want you to put failures. I want two columns. One side failures and the other side learn and apply now. That's how you're going to title them. Failures, learn and apply now. And on that failure side, I want you to be brutally honest and hard on yourself. And I want you to list out every failure you've had. And I don't care how big or small. I don't care if it's like I walked away from that meeting and didn't say what I thought, all the way up to I had this incredible idea and I never went after it and then somebody else did it. Whatever it is, I want you to put it all down on the failure side. Then what you're going to do is you're going to take each one of those that you wrote I want you to take an arrow to the other side and I want you to fill in, well, what did I learn and how would I apply it now? Like, what would I do differently now? What did I learn from that? How would I move forward differently? So we're going to take those failures, that baggage, and we're going to chip away at them instead of the other way around. And you are going to list it out so that you can really shift your mindset on those failures and start minimizing that baggage so that it's not so heavy. The baggage can be so heavy. So that's the first thing. Now, here's the second thing I want you to do. And by the way, this works incredibly well with people around you who you're trying to get to buy into your ideas, but have a lot of baggage of their own. I like to call them legacy thinkers, but you know who they are. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to ask yourself a question. When you start to feel that fear and that baggage and the brick walls coming up, and you're like, oh no, tomorrow, but in the past, like this happened to me when I did this. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to say yes. I want you to acknowledge it, right? You can't ignore it. If you try to ignore the voice, it gets louder. It's like when you're snowboarding and you're like, don't focus on the tree, don't focus on the tree. And then you focus on the tree because you're trying to avoid it. So you hit the tree. So you can't ignore it because then you just focus more on it. But I want you to do is say, yes, I hear you, lizard brain or whatever's talking to you. And what's changed since then? Because here's the thing, the world's changed. Whatever that baggage is that you're carrying around that's like, well, you got shut down when you did this the first time. Well, what's changed since then? Well, I've got more experience. The marketplace has changed. The customer is different. I have a new perspective on this. I've got more resources than I had before. Whatever it is, ask saying yes, but what's changed can make all the difference. All right. I hope this podcast was helpful to you. This was really a podcast about confidence and getting over those things that are chipping away at your confidence, because I don't want to see that for you. I know that you have this incredible confident innovator inside of you, and I want to see it unleashed into the world. So, and like I said, we talk about innovation as like process and initiative, and it's none of that. I think we need to flip the myth out there that that's what innovation is. I think we need to make it a human thing and something that's accessible to all of us. So, and confidence is a big part of that. So thank you for joining. And hey, if you know someone else that should listen to this because you're like, hey, they have a confidence issue, a crisis of confidence, or yeah, they could really, that's really what's holding them back too. Send them a link to this podcast. Like, let's help everybody out. Let's do it together. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining me. Cannot wait for the next one. Tomorrow out.